Good evening, everyone. This is Jim Hoffman.
This is Josh Knapp.
And, of course, you're listening to a live episode right now of EMS Office Hours.
Yes, we are live online.
If you are listening to recording, I appreciate you taking the time, of course, and downloading the recorded version. And, of course, all previous versions can be found over at emsofficehours.com, also on iTunes, and over at the ProMed Network. .com as well. So, Josh, today is, I don't know, I'm hoping it's not going to be too controversial or go too off on a tangent, but...
Oh, we live for controversy.
I guess.
Come on.
I don't know.
Come on.
You know, like, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings on this show. And
well, I
just, well, I know you do, but I don't want people to think this is an EMT versus paramedic show or episode, but Bob Sullivan.
The paramedics out there have to understand that they were once budding EMTs, and all the EMTs out there have to understand that the paramedics were once EMTs.
Right.
Now, we have erased all recollection of that, as you will attest to, I'm sure, on the bus, because who saves paramedics? EMTs. Of course, I read the blogs.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I am. Well, today's show is actually Bob Sullivan from EMS World sent me this link, and I think he's going to be calling in, or he might be on the line. If Bob, if you're holding there, I'll be with you in a second. If you are calling in, you can. If you're in hold, just hang in there. I'll be getting to you shortly. If you do want to call in, of course, just as a reminder to everybody, the phone number is toll free. It's 877-217-3924. And, of course, we'd love to get your take on the topic. And the topic for today is based on an article about Texas EMS, the EMS system in Texas that used to run double medics, and they are now going to be moving into a one medic, one EMT type of crews. And they're saying that this is based on patient care, not really on financial reasons, and they're saying that the main reason they're doing this is because of patient care, because with one medic on the crew, you're going to get that medic doing more skills, being more proficient in what they're doing. And apparently there's other places around the country that changed as well.
Sorry. I sneezed.
Bless you. But apparently, Josh, there's other places around the country as well that have changed from dual medics down to one medic, one EMT, and pretty much saying that it's due because of the fact that the medics get more skills that way, they're more proficient in the intubation and the IVs and all that, because they're doing more of it rather than splitting the responsibilities or alternating calls.
Right. You are of course talking about the Mensa Medic system.
Right.
We partner up an EMT and paramedic, and what the thinking behind response is that on an advanced call. Now here's where I think the argument breaks down, because in New York City they were thinking of going Mensa Medic. And
right.
I know that upstate, when the system you work, it's Mensa Medic.
Yeah.
And you know now that I've gone to critical transport and transport. I'm working towards my CC. I'm not there. But I do transport, and they run transport dual medic. They like to run it dual medic, but they often run Mensa Medic when the system's a little short on medics. So they're using it as a way of catching up, keeping the buses in service and running. And the thought that was explained to me when the 911 system was going to go Mensa Medic, was that in a critical response, you're sending two buses anyway, usually an EMT and paramedic bus, where you'd have the same quantity, two EMTs, two paramedics. So when you do Mensa Medic, all you're doing is on a critical call sending another bus, and lo and behold, you have the same quantity. But as we all know, that couldn't be, less of the truth. And I mean, that's what you would get if you were able to get that. But how many times are you just waiting because there are no other resources available? I mean, if you've ever worked a major holiday or a New Year's Eve or anything,
snowstorm.
Snowstorm. You're on your own.
Sure.
And a lot of times When I'm not putting paramedics on a pedestal here. I mean, I'm a medic. I believe that, you know, that there's a difference, you know, and there certainly is a difference in the amount of education we have. We're not better people. We just have gone through more medical education and skills education. And that's, you know, really where the dividing line is. Okay. Yeah. So I'm not putting down EMTs here, but you know, when you have that level, when you have it and it gets more complicated, how many times, Jim, you've been on a job and you look at your medic partner and you go, what do you think? I mean, you know, we are taught to work as a team. And, you know, somebody, you're about to give drugs, you're about to stop somebody's heart, you sort of want a, you know, confirmation that everything is, you're doing the right thing. And a lot of times, hey, you know what, you may be off your game that day, and your partner's there, and they can, you know, how many times have I had a partner who taught me my original skills, but couldn't get a stick to save his life that day? And I'm there, and I happen to be able to get the stick. And once in a while, it's vice versa. And the same thing with dropping a tube or any of these other things. Now, when you're on your own, you can't turn to your EMT partner and say, hey, can you get this IV or can you get this intubation?
Right.
I mean, in most systems.
Right. Well, you know what, Josh, I have somebody on hold.
Awesome. Get them on.
Let me see who it is. And bring. I actually have two people, so let me get this one.
Maybe I riled them up, Jim.
It's possible. Hold on a second. Hi, caller. Are you still there?
Yeah, it's Bob Sullivan.
Hey, Bob. How
hey,
you doing?
Bob.
How you doing, Bob?
Good. How are you guys?
Bob, thanks for bringing this topic to my attention. I appreciate it. I think, you know, it's a good topic to kind of bring a little bit more light to. So I think Tim is on too, Bob. I'm going to bring him in real quick. I think it's Tim. Tim, is that you?
Yep.
Hey, Tim, how you doing? Thanks for coming in.
Hello.
All right. So, Bob, what's your main take on it, just as a quick overview so we can get where you're coming from on it?
Well, I think it's interesting that some of the comments, one of the ones was what Josh mentioned, where paramedics say they rely on their partner to break them in when they're new. The other thing is that there's very little evidence that paramedics make a difference for anything, and a lot of systems have rely on BLS units, yeah, single or double EMTs. And even in New Jersey, they're arguing about requiring two EMTs to be on an ambulance, and
yes.
There's an uproar about that.
Right.
So I just think it's interesting that where there is some science behind the number of paramedics, a low number of paramedics to population ratio, that people are so upset about potentially changing from two medic ambulances to medic and EMT.
Right, right. So Tim, what are you? I have a feeling you're starting with the one medic platform as well, right? Due to the fact of the lack of the research of doing anybody any good and the skill issue and all that, right?
The main thing is the deterioration of the skills due to lack of use. We have a huge problem with inability to maintain skills in EMS, and having more medics on a truck only makes that worse.
Yeah,
there
but Tim,
is
you...
the opposite problem of places where you run a lot of calls and the medics need to switch off. But
right.
That can be handled in some places where they have, you know, the calls. This, you know, if you've got everybody responding to the call, the BLS guys will handle the BLS calls. The ALS guys will handle the ALS calls. You don't have to worry about whether you're sending a non-ALS crew on a call that ends up being ALS.
Yeah, but Tim, I mean, there's two separate points. One of the things that, you know, you brought up is that, you know, the skills and the training, there's a big degradation in skills out there, and that the more calls you do, and partially due to the more calls you do, but you've made the argument several times that that is really a training issue more than an experience in the field. because it's very hard to...
I think it's both.
Well, I think it's very hard to set training expectations off of that you're going to get so much experience in the field, because you could be on a bus that gets particularly busy and has a higher number of incidents. Like if you're working in the New York area, you're working in the Bronx, you're going to get a greater issue of incidences of asthma and cardiac, where if you're working somewhere else in the system, you might just get more trauma. And you're not getting those and that's just by, you know, the pick of the grid that you're working in. So, you know, it really, that aspect of skills, I'm going to sort of push off, and I know that you can argue counter to this point, but I'm going to push off to training. I mean, there's got to be an integration of training with real life and what we do and pick up the slack, but we certainly need more training. But the aspect of, and what Bob was saying earlier of that, you know, the studies out there have basically said, hey, paramedics don't really make a difference. I think those studies are skewed towards time and numbers in terms of getting, you know, the greater amount of people to the hospital in the least amount of time. And in which case, if you use those metrics, you know, nobody's going to make a difference. The only thing that's going to make a difference is diesel, and we should all have super turbocharged hyperdrive ambulances and clearway pathways. And no skills, just throw them on board and get them to a hospital.
But the studies on response times and transport times show they don't make a difference.
Well, I'm wondering, though, I mean, I think when you're saying that the paramedics don't make a difference, I mean, I think if you talk to EMTs that have a critical patient, EMTs would tell you differently if they have a paramedic come on scene and is able to, you know, medicate a patient or to intubate a patient and things like that. I think the EMTs would, you know, the real life aspect of it would show the EMTs feeling that they do make a difference.
And does the intubation make a difference?
Well, I don't think it's not the actual. I'm not saying the individual skill. I'm talking about overall. You know, EMTs, I think, would probably argue that, you know, I call for medics because this patient was a tight asthmatic or something like that.
Well, the when you break down calls, you have a phase that is on scene, then usually there's some things done in the ambulance before transport's initiated. But if it's a really sick patient, you should be initiating transport soon anyway. And that second paramedic is going to be in the driver's seat and not able to help. Now, I know they have variations where some services, firefighters are allowed to drive the ambulance, but one thing I'd like is us to get a lot better at ambulance driving and being able to keep a smooth ride on the way to the hospital and not bounce the patients around. So I want the person driving to be a very competent and experienced ambulance driver. I know that's a bad word on EMS calls right now. But, you know, that second paramedic is only going to be in a probably 30 to 40% of the patient contact. So would it be better to have a second experienced paramedic show up on the critical calls by themselves and either help out on scene or ride with them to the hospital?
Well,
like a supervisor.
Are you talking in Mensomedic systems or are you talking in Dualmedic where the one medic's actually driving the ambulance? Because they've made a change in the New York City system, and it's based on that. And it's like if you arrive on the system and you have EMTs backing you up, two medics ride in the back, and the EMTs drive the buses.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess. But then there's an ambulance out of service then. I think you could probably utilize resources.
Well, isn't that the way they used to do things in New York, where – the ALS crew would hop in the BLS truck and transport that way so they get back in service sooner, since you had about a 5-to-1 ratio of BLS to ALS?
Not sure. Could you rephrase the question? I'm not sure what you were asking.
Well, didn't you always end up with two trucks out of service because on a serious call you would have the ALS people hopping in the BLS truck to transport? And that way, cleanup is going to be for the BLS truck?
Yeah, I think back in the day, I mean, when I was there, they would dispatch BLS and ALS to all critical calls, and then they eventually knock it down to where they were just dispatching only ALS to critical calls unless it was a known arrest or something like that.
Right. Level 3 or above.
Yeah.
It was a dual response. Actually, now it's like one dual response. I mean, you don't even, for 2 and 3, you're lucky if you get backup on that. You know, unless they're dead, you're not going to get second pair of hands, is bottom line. And then once they're dead, you're getting everybody there, which is more of a pain in the ass because, you know, not only do the rooms get crowded, and of course we have those optimal situations where everybody's in a well-lit room up on an examination table in the supine position with, you know, their anterior aspect of their epiglottis, you know, presented so we can get an easy intubation, just like the doctors have.
Yeah.
This intubation is really a good idea in cardiac arrest.
I missed a comment, Tim.
It isn't as if intubation is really a good idea in cardiac arrest.
Oh, okay. I thought you said something along those lines. I mean, listen.
There's no evidence that any ventilation improves outcome in cardiac arrest. Why go with one that is most likely to result in an interruption of compressions? Because what's the first thing a lot of people do when they start trying to intubate? Oh, stop compression so I can get a good view.
Exactly.
Anything that stops compressions that doesn't improve outcome should be done away with. And that includes the PIC crew model of throwing ventilations and other stuff in there. We should just be doing the continuous compressions.
Mm.
You know, I don't want to deviate from the point. I'm not exactly sure that's entirely proven out, and we all know that this is a sort of an evolving subject as they're looking more onto how to make a better outcome in cardiac arrest, Tim. So is it all right?
Show me some evidence. Ventilations improve outcome.
Well, that's what
there's
I'm saying.
There's no evidence.
You know, let's...
There's no
let's
evidence. Take... Without evidence, it should only be studied.
Well, the other thing, I don't know if you listen to the EDUCAST.
Yeah, Bob.
They're taking the approach to it. They're using a treatment that is not even well-tested. I don't know if there is a single study that has compared ventilations to no ventilations. And... they're saying, well, this is the standard of care because this is the way we've always done it. And that's like alternative medicine. There's no evidence to prove it, but we think it might work, so we're going to do it.
Well, you know, listen, Bob, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, John Studnick was on the last episode of the EMS EDUCAST, and he went, he's at the Carolinas Medical Center, and they actually looked at this in their system, and they found, you know, they do paramedic EMT or paramedic intermediate, not all ambulances. Now, they also do, I believe, because of their sort of public utility model, interfacility transports, too. And they're the only, they do non-emergency nursing home discharges and everything. So they went through all their paramedics, and they went through the number of cardiac arrests, and the paramedics only have the opportunities to intubate once or twice a year. So their protocol changed to they use the King airway, and survival went up. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he went through and said that chances of a poor outcome from a cardiac arrest go up when there's even a single intubation attempt, successful, not anything. So they even gave the King airway to their first responders. So They took a system. Now, if you look in Seattle, it doesn't intubation doesn't seem to be a problem. Dr. Studnick also went and looked at how they can get their paramedics more practice. Well, they can't do very much about the calls, but they went through and things like the operating room, because there are so many medical students and there's so many people competing for intubations that they weren't going to be able to get paramedics more practice on live patients. And just given that system demographics, the best thing to do is to use the King airway. So now imagine now they're single medic EMTs. I don't know if they have like a backup paramedic or how they work with more critical calls. But if they had two paramedic ambulances, you know, that's half as many tubes. You'd be intubating every 2 years like they did in San Diego, which also, you know, we saw what a disaster that was.
Yeah. You know, Bob, I have another call on the line. Let me bring them in, see if we get another quick opinion here. Hi, who's on the line with us? Hello. Who's this?
Hi, Jim. This is Matt.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right.
Listen, I work in multiple agencies, and I think it all depends on what agency you're working with and what you're working with.
That's an awesome point, Matt. You know, I was going to sort of bring something like that up. But go ahead, expand on that one.
I mean, you're getting to the point where you have bad medics because they're working with medics all the time, and then you've got lazy EMTs because they're working with medics all the time. And
that is an issue.
One of the agencies I work in, it all depends on the shift. We have double medic crews, we have EMT medic crews, and it's created this horrible group of EMTs that want every call to be ALS because, you know, they constantly have a medic to rely on. Another agency I work at, everything, you know, calls get turned to BLS, they really should be ALS because, you know, the option is there.
Right. And there are also systems that, you know, calls get to BLS because the medic is spread so thin that he's on a fly car and he's sort of pressured to push a lot of these calls that, you know, if they can make it to the hospital, go and let them go with BLS and get on to the next get on to the next job. I think what Bob was saying before about,
well, that's an oversight,
you know,
problem.
What, yeah, I mean, but what Bob was saying before was about, you know, the number of tubes in systems, I think is a community perception problem mixed with an actual call volume issue. I mean, you know, if you're not going to be getting a certain level of experience in the field on a constant basis, then you have to turn to alternate methods in order to make sure that the services provided are adequate. And if you look at some of these systems that are very low volume systems, you know, it's not the fact that you're splitting or dividing up, you know, that one medic is going to get a tube every other month instead of once a month. I think it's more the fact that you need to recognize that one tube a month isn't enough to maintain that skill, and that maybe you should be looking at an alternate airway like the King Airway.
Well, and then when we look at different areas, are the needs of the patients any different?
I think absolutely the needs of the patient. But that's also a community issue, because some communities can afford to pay for everything that they want, and some communities are, you know, they can't afford anything. Right. Yeah, and I like that better. They choose not to. It's an active thing on the community's part, active choice on the community's part.
But I mean, I have a question for Tim. Is he still there?
Tim, are you there?
I'm just wondering Jim's opinion about this whole thing called the zebra hunter.
Well, you know, zebra hunting. Let me tell you something. You know, we talk about the research and all, and about how paramedics don't really make a difference. So why not just move towards getting rid of paramedics and let EMTs do King Airways and drag people to the hospital in the back of an ambulance, and however they get to the hospital, get to the hospital. What's preventing that?
Or you could do what Canada does and have 2-year associate degree BLS paramedics and an additional year on top of that to become an advanced care paramedic.
But then, Bob, we go back to the argument that we're not making a difference. So what's the difference in how much training we have if we're not making a difference in transporting people to the hospital? You know, if we're not making a difference when we get there, what's the difference in how much training we have? If we have a 6-month online paramedic program you took, or if you went to school for 2 years and then had advanced training after that, I mean, who are we benefiting if it's not – if research is apparently showing that the paramedics don't do any benefit to anybody, why even have the paramedics? Just maybe just further train
– We need to have the paramedics doing things that make a difference, and we have things that we're doing because of entirely different reasons. Somebody thinks that giving epi and cardiac arrest is a good idea. Still no evidence that it improves outcomes. Same thing for lidocaine and amiodarone. There is a study being done on lidocaine and amiodarone now, so we should be able to get rid of them. Intubation and cardiac arrest.
Well, wait a minute. What about other than cardiac arrest? I see that there seems to be a big emphasis on medicine doing cardiac arrest. What about all the other calls?
I'm just using that as an example because that's what we've been talking about. We're doing things that have no possibility of improving the outcome, and then these are the things that we look at to see if paramedics make a difference. They don't make a difference. Paramedics shouldn't be doing this stuff in cardiac arrest, so whether they do it or whether they don't do it has nothing to do with whether paramedics make a difference on other calls. Cardiac arrest is BLS treatment. No ALS treatment has been shown to make a difference in outcomes from cardiac arrest. So evaluating paramedics on these calls, the only thing you're going to show is that paramedics sometimes get in the way by trying to do ALS stuff that interrupts compressions.
Well, you know, then we're back to my point of just let's put them in super-fueled, turbocharged, HEMI ambulances and let them run.
No, we're not. I didn't say that at all. If we're looking at cardiac arrest, and we're not just looking at cardiac arrest, but if we're looking at cardiac arrest, the things that medics do not make a difference. Cardiac arrest is less than 1% of the calls. If we look at the stuff that medics do that make a difference, congestive heart failure, nitroglycerin, and CPAP do a wonderful job of decreasing the number of intubations. And that's not necessarily improving survival, but that's as far as they've been studied. We need to do better studies on this. We need to start studying bolus IV nitroglycerin for CHF and see how much difference that makes, because that will probably cut intubations even more and will probably improve survival. Studies that have been done on that are too small to show improved survival.
You know, guys, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to tell an EMT on a cardiac arrest call, listen, I'm not making a difference here as a paramedic, so I'm going to go drive and just sit in the back.
Jim, and I see here's where the difference is. Here's the difference is we train EMTs in 100, maybe 150 hours soon on how to do CPR and give oxygen and bag duff mask. And we paramedics understand, or hopefully understand, why these things are done. And there is definitely value. Now, personally, I do think that paramedics make a difference. I'm playing devil's advocate here because people are up in arms about going from two paramedics to one paramedic. And it's understanding why someone might have passed out or what makes their chest pain different. And these are the things that I don't think they train paramedics, frankly, enough in. And definitely don't train EMTs who are in a position to decide when, what hospital are we going to transport to? Are we going to use lights and sirens? And should I cancel the paramedics that are coming because the chest pain gets worse when they cough? Those types of things. If you think back to the patients, how many, does an IV make a difference? Does an intubation, most of the patients we intubate are going to stay dead. And it's not the skills, it's the understanding of why we do the skills and when we do the skills.
Well, I think, my thing is that, you have EMTs out there, and I think Matt made a point before, too, where you start getting EMTs that start getting medic dependent, that they don't want to rely even on the minimal training that they do have. They're not looking to be trained any more in depth. And even when you work with protocols where protocols are allowing them to give epi for certain patients and assist in medications, nitroglycerin, and things like that, they don't do it. They call for the paramedic and they wait on scene instead of initiating transport, instead of, taking responsibility for things. But yet, they still want to try to control scenes that the paramedic is on and have a larger say in what's going on with the patient. But then if something goes wrong with the patient or the treatment doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, they're pointing the finger and saying, well, the paramedic was there. The paramedic was in charge.
You know, we're dealing with two different things here. One is we're dealing with field
more
research.
Than two.
Well, yeah. Okay. Fair enough, Tim. But we're dealing with the sort of collision between field research and then what we see in the field. And the last one is budgets and what they want to accomplish through those through saving community money. And the reason I say that is because we have a rule basically in New York right now where if you have a chest pain, a suspected MI with chest pain, and you do a 12 lead and you get ST elevations, you need to stay on site. You need to call medical control, and you are not allowed to roll until medical control allows you to go to the nearest quote-unquote STEMI center. And there's a couple of problems with that. One is almost every frickin' hospital in New York is a STEMI center. And two is after they get into the ER of a non-STEMI, okay, or a non-cath available hospital, they're going to be transported to a cath lab anyway. And the cath labs are so efficient here that they're just pumping them out like Jiffy Lubes. So you're not really backing anything up by bringing a patient who maybe is not a STEMI to a STEMI center. But you're not allowed to roll, and you're not allowed to bring the patient anywhere until you wait on scene with that patient and call medical control. And that's all a budget issue.
If you go back,
that's idiotic.
Yes. I mean, there's no room for a judgment. But shouldn't there be a package that we bring? EMS, whatever level, bring to every patient. I mean, if you fall and break your hip, don't you deserve to have pain medicine available? And don't you deserve to have an EKG if you're vomiting, you end up having chest pain when someone gets there, if a call gets under triage? And these are the kinds of things that we as a profession need to figure out. So you don't get into situations like, you know, a BLS crew is waiting for a patient with chest pain to figure out what the best hospital is. I mean, shouldn't that be available on every transport unit that
Absolutely.
Shows up?
Well, that's a big argument.
The BLS crew should not be waiting for ALS. It is a problem where they get to the hospital, at least around me, they get to the hospital, the nurses and the doctors will say, where is a medic? Why isn't there a medic on this call? So they're getting pressure to stay and not do anything until the medic gets there, even though the protocol says you will not wait on scene for a medic. And these are the same EMTs who say, oh, I'm not deviating from protocol to do this or to do that. And it's like, but you deviate from protocol every time you sit on scene and wait for a medic when the hospital is closer than the medic. Now, we don't have good oversight on this. The medical directors, and these would be the same people who came up with this thoughtless program of having the medic sit on scene and wait for the cath lab to call up and say, yeah, we have an opening. They're the ones who need to straighten this out. It's an oversight problem. The EMT should not be waiting on scene.
You know, Bob, you make a good point as far as, you know, people getting the treatment and the medical care that they're entitled to, that they deserve when they call 911. And, you know, I think by having one medic, one EMT, that can solve that problem, you know, to a point where when they get there, whatever the patient presents with, whether it's an ALS situation or a BLS situation, it can be handled by that one crew and not have to have an EMT waiting on scene for a med to get there. And this is an issue, I think, a lot of times when you get the argument about, oh, we're in a very rural area, we can't afford paramedics, or, you know, oh, we all are volunteers, we don't have paramedics, we can't afford to have paramedics. I mean, you know, that's the argument on when it comes down to money, and the whole patient and what the patient's getting goes out the window.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you do have a problem of being able to afford it. And that is something that they look at, but the people paying for it don't really know what they're paying for. They don't know the difference between what a medic can do and what an EMT can do. We don't even agree about what the difference is between what difference a medic makes in the outcome. So how do we expect populations, whether rural or urban, to make an informed decision about what they should pay for?
Yeah. But you know what? I got one other call on the line. I'm going to just mute Matt for a minute so I can bring another call on. He's been on hold for a little bit. Let me just see if he has another point of view to maybe bring in here. Hi, who's this on the line with us? Hello? Maybe not. All right, I guess he must have... Well, if you called in, guy, I'm sorry to kept you on hold for a little while there. You can give us a call back. I'm sure we'd bring you into the conversation. But, I mean, listen, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I mean, what do you as far as the article itself, Bob, when they talk about saving money by doing this versus patient, you know, the patient's benefiting more. I mean, what do you think their motivation was for it? Do you think it was more financial, or do you think it was more patient care?
Well, Paul Hinchey, Austin Travis County's medical director, is not a bean counter. He was on the Eagles. They did their proposed benchmarks for urban and suburban EMS, and he was on the study in Wake County where they implemented the different changes to improve survival. And it, when you look at, you know, the cost of an employee's benefits and everything else, they already have all ALS trucks to transition, you know, their existing paramedics and to replace some of them with EMTs and eventually have, they said, about 65% paramedics, 35% EMTs. It's really not that much of a cost difference. And they've said if you may stay as an EMT in your career, in 8 years, you'd make about what a paramedic makes starting out. And they're going to be hiring EMTs that are going to go on to become paramedics anyway. So I don't think this, they're not saving. You know, if they were going to cut half of their ambulances and make them BLS, that maybe there'd be a cost savings there from the equipment. But
you know, I got to say that I read that article, and you got to read that article again and sort of have a suspicious eye to what is propaganda and what is truth. I mean, whenever they say it's not about – listen, what do they say? Whenever you say it's not about the money, it's about the money. You know, and basically you're saying, hey, you know, we're not really cutting costs here. But
when you're being asked directly, is it about the money, you have to answer the question.
Yeah.
Right.
That is
and
true.
Since and the time they did this before, or the time they considered this before, they were looking at it because of money.
And what did
now,
the article start with?
The evidence.
Go ahead. The article started with, this is a budget in this day and age of cutback.
Well, that's the reporter's choice of an introductory paragraph in order to get the most attention. It's not necessarily what anybody has presented him with as far as information. I think Dr. Hinchey's right. The best way to improve care is to go from dual medic to medic EMT. And if you want to find a way to bust your budget, do something that is going to worsen the care, increase the malpractice liability. That'll make up in one call, one bad call, for any savings that you've got, or in a city that size, maybe two or three calls because they're so large.
Yeah, but that doesn't, I don't think
it's
that's
not the money.
It's not going to, okay. A lawsuit is not going to affect an ambulance service. Go ahead.
Yeah, Bob.
Why not?
They have numbers, and I have the book in front of me. I haven't been able to find it, from the Resuscitate, How to Improve Survival from Cardiac Arrest in Your Community by Mickey Eisenberg. And he has a number that they recommend of paramedics per population. And the fewer paramedics, the better. I mean, it's there. It just happens to be cheaper to also.
Seattle is one of the places known for a very high ratio of population per paramedic. Boston is another one, and they're both known for being at the top of the competence level in intubation, you know, over 95% success rate and zero unrecognized esophageal tubes. So that's where everybody should be. And yet you've got places where they'll have half a dozen people show up on a call and they're all paramedics. And you've got fire departments saying, we're going to make it so that every hire is now a paramedic. It's not the way to improve the quality of care. It's creating a show for the population. You've got people who don't understand what is good patient care, deciding that because somebody has a P at the end of their title, they're improving the quality of care that is delivered, and that's not the case. If you're diluting the abilities of the people, you're not improving anything unless you're a lawyer.
And I agree with that statement completely. I really do, right off. It has nothing to do with how many paramedics that you have or the ratio of paramedics to the system. It's the type of system that you're running and what the calls are, the call volume for the individual units.
Yeah. Okay. And you still have supervisors available to back up any medic on a call that is complicated. So it's not as if there isn't another medic available. They're just not necessarily immediately available, and they may be dispatched at the time the original crew is dispatched, depending on how the 911 call comes in. But you should have supervisors available or another unit from territory nearby in the case of a rural or suburban to rural area.
Yeah. You know, I mean, listen, guys, I'm going to tell you this. You know, I can get on board with the one medic, one EMT thing. I understand as far as skills and all that great stuff and, you know, your exposure to the patients and everything. But I think in order to do that, I think the EMTs need to be brought on board and brought up to speed and what's expected of them. Because I've found personally over the years the EMTs that are out there are more interested in driving the ambulance than they are doing patient care and being told that this patient is a B-list patient, it's not an A-list patient, and you can transport them safely in the back of the ambulance without me having to intervene as a medic. And I think a lot of the EMTs just have this mentality that they can go ahead and just drive and try to make every call an ALS call or wait for paramedics to get there so that the paramedic care gets initiated, whether it's just an EKG and an IV or if it's something, you know, just an evaluation. I just feel like the EMTs are not, you know, holding up, let's say, their end of the bargain. And unless they're going to do that, the one medic, one EMT system is going to wind up burning out medics because the medics are going to be doing all the calls while the EMT is just driving. You know,
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, every experience, I guess, could be different, Tim. I'm talking about my personal experience. I found over the years when I first started as a medic that I had EMTs that would back me up on calls, and they would have no problem taking a B-list call that I was dispatched to if I found the call was BLS. And over time, and working in New York City and working upstate New York, working in New Jersey, I have found that the EMT mentality has been more and more becoming medic dependent and letting the medic do as much as they can let them do and get away with letting them do instead of sitting back and taking care of the patient at a BLS level. And this isn't all EMT, and it's kind of a blanket statement.
But
I'm going to back up that statement, Jim, and say, yeah, I've absolutely seen that transition as well. I mean, back when I was starting, it used to be sort of a point of pride not to call medics when you were an EMT.
Exactly.
And now, you know, when you're in the system, you still have a few of those buses who just, you know, recognize maybe a little to detriment that transportation rules out over on scene care, but usually, you know, it's the other way around.
Yeah, like I said, it's not
an oversight issue.
Well, yeah, and well, yeah, good.
Yeah.
If
you have EMTs who are pressuring the medics to do BLS calls, that's not the way the system should work. And if you have EMTs who are not recognizing that a call is ALS or who think that they can do a better job than ALS, then that also is something that needs to be addressed. And this is important for the medical director or QA, whoever is supposed to be making sure that things run smoothly, and it should be getting back to the medical director. But this is something that should be addressed when it happens. If the medics are getting burned out because BLS is not handling the BLS calls, that's not good.
But now,
that's not
don't
the
you think so that you could pretty much make any call if you write it a certain way and make it appear ALS, even if it's not? I mean, if you get an
ALS. Oh, I know medics who do that.
But you, but I know
there's a reason to check the blood sugar on this patient, so I'm going to make this an ALS call. And
but you get EMTs
when
though,
there is no justification.
You'll get EMTs who you'll get patient, and then they'll start writing in the chart about chest pain and 7/10 pain, and wording it in such a way that it looks like you didn't even do an assessment and you didn't even evaluate or didn't want to treat a patient. Just because they don't know how to do it.
And I've worked with people like that. And what I'll do is I will type up notes and, not put the patient's name on them, but the time of the call and the date of the call, and write it as if I were writing a chart. And that way, if anybody comes back to me and says, hey, this looks like it should have been an ALS call, I say, here are my notes from the time of the call. This is what I assessed. Compare it to what is written in the chart, because almost always when you look at the chart that is suggesting that it's an ALS chart, it's not going to be well written. It's just, I'm going to throw a few scare words in here so I can claim that the medic should have done this. But there's not going to be any thorough assessment of the chest pain to make it clear what kind of chest pain it was. And a chest pain should probably never be BLS unless it's something that should never have been a 911 call to begin with. But you've got somebody with classic indigestions.
Well, the problem with chest pain, though, Tim, is that the public knows the magic words. They call 911 and they know that, this is what they think the dispatcher wants to hear. They think the dispatcher wants to hear chest pain or I can't breathe and things like that. So it gets dispatched as an ALS, chest pain call. But, a paramedic that can go and assess a patient and figure out that it's not cardiac in nature, or they're, confident that it's not cardiac in nature, and they're going to turf it to a BLS. And like you said, then the EMT will take it and be
chest pain. You probably shouldn't be doing that anyway.
Well,
I
think we for the most
probably
part,
not the best example.
But I think the 18-year-old with chest pain, that's had a cough for X amount of days and whatnot. You know what I mean? But when you have an EMT
or the HYS unconscious call.
Yeah, but when you have an EMT that starts plugging all those scare words into it, and then a QA not to get a hold of the chart and see what's going on, and they say, okay, this person could have been ALS. And then I think it starts becoming a billing issue where QA and management start seeing those calls as potential ALS workups that it's not being taken advantage of. And then they take the side of the EMT and not necessarily the side of the patient and what was best for the patient at the time. I mean,
which is why when I work with somebody like that, I do write up what I assess the patient as so that these can be compared. Like you can look at this chart and, look how thorough the chart is. And you can look at my notes, which amazingly are much longer and more detailed than the entire chart written to suggest that this couldn't be BLS or shouldn't be BLS.
Right.
I also try to talk with the doctor at the hospital. Do you know of any reason why there should have been ALS on the way here? And the doctor is where I go mostly know me. So.
Yeah, bring the doctors into it as well. I had that caller back online. I don't want to keep him on hold. I don't know. Let's see if we can get him back and get their opinion. Are you with us, caller? I know I've had you on hold for a while. You there? Hello? I guess he loses interest once he's on hold for a minute or two.
I sort of hear something in the background, but I don't know if that's somebody else.
Oh, well. Well, I'm sorry, Cole. I know you're on hold for about 12 minutes there. I apologize.
I don't think this problem is a big problem. I think once you have the medical director step in and address a few cases of it, then any EMTs who are being too aggressive in not calling ALS or being too aggressive in trying to push stuff off onto ALS should be addressed if the medical director is doing their job.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that the idea and the, I mean, I guess it's Bob, do you know that? I don't know. I don't have the numbers, but do you know offhand the roughly what the percentage is, like how many systems work one in one, one medic, one EMT? Isn't it more majority of that happening than dual medic?
I believe so. I think dual medic are very. I don't have any numbers.
I meant to look.
You know,
it up,
anecdotally, Jim, numbers. I think that's the case, though. What I heard was that most very high population urban areas that have big budgets go the dual medic, dual EMT system, and then the more rural or the smaller budget areas go to the Mentimedic. And that's why sort of I brought up before that, you know, yeah, BS, this is a budget issue. Don't disguise it as anything other than that. And, you know, I was looking at the Texas EMS, you know, article, and, you know, yeah, I understand the argument Tim was making that it's that if they're saying that it's not a budget issue and they're saying that there's that they're paying equally and it's really not going to cost them any less. But, you know, I know enough. I mean, how many times we're reading a paper do we actually get what the actual truth is? And how many times when an official is speaking on behalf of an organization are they whitewashing something to favor the organization? Because they don't want the community to think that they're cutting their access to medical care for budgetary reasons.
So what you're saying is Dr. Hinchey's a liar.
No, but the way that was written, and that's not very fair to.
Well, he says it's not a budget issue. He says he's doing it for quality, and the research all supports going
because
to.
You want
to
know something that
fewer medics,
and they could very well be in this particular area. Some indication that there is a quality control issue, but I'll bet you. You know, and they don't say this, but I'll bet you a byproduct of this decision is going to be, over time, a lower operating cost.
Paul Hinchey went to Mays County, which did the same thing. They did the same thing when they rolled out their advanced practice paramedics, and they
who
still
did that?
Have the second.
Bob, who did that?
Paul Hinchey was the assistant medical director in Wake County.
Okay.
And they did the same thing. They went dual medic ambulances to medic EMT when they started advanced practice paramedics. And then they have very high clinical performance.
Now, did they get rid of medics through attrition, or did they, you know, want to
no,
bring
they
out
promoted
the
they process? Created a, they, a no, they created an advanced practice position. So some got promoted, and they got backfilled with EMTs.
Okay, I gotcha.
And attrition probably took care of some of it.
Right.
Attrition is as they retire, as they move to other places, whatever, the spots for some of the medics are no longer filled.
It should be addressed.
Yeah.
And that's what they're planning on doing in Austin. It is Austin, right?
Yeah. I think it's, what, the Travis County, or I think it's Austin,
okay.
Travis. Yeah, Austin Travis
County. Yeah, Austin Travis County EMS is one of the largest ones in Texas, I think. And they
so what do they average?
I don't think they pay a lot down there.
Yeah.
Typically they don't pay a lot anywhere in the country other than, you know, the like
But if you go to Texas, you get the lowest pay that I consistently hear. When I have been involved in conversations about pay, the people from Texas, the EMTs are making a little bit over minimum wage, and the medics, some of them aren't even making $10 an hour. I don't know what they make in this system, but Texas as a whole has some of the worst paid EMS around.
And that's a whole other subject, isn't it?
Yeah. Listen, guys, I want to just wrap it up. We only have about maybe 4 minutes left, so if anyone want to just maybe give you a closing thoughts on it, Tim, before we shut off.
The more medics, the lower the skills. So the idea that we need more medics is not a good thing. We want more skilled medics, and if that means cutting the medics, I think we have way too many medics in many of the wrong places. If we cut back on the number of medics, we get more skill per medic. And you see that in the places like Seattle and Boston, where the ratio of medics to population is the lowest or some of the lowest in the country, but their intubation success rate and their other skill rates are extremely high. They're the kind that we want to see. And when we do studies in other areas, we keep ending up with, oh, they've got five medics showing up on the call. Their average number of tubes per year is less than one, and their success rate is very bad.
Mm. Well, what about you, Bob? I'm going to say, Jim, that, you know, there are areas like Seattle. There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And areas like Seattle use different statistics than areas like Boston or New York. Texas uses different metrics than Chicago. Until we're on the same plane.
What kind of statistics change when the tube goes in the trachea or doesn't?
It's the Eustein criteria. It's the same. Seattle started the registry that the CDC uses. That's Seattle, they've done that.
Coming up to discredit Seattle's studies, but I don't see it as true.
What I'm saying is that, you know, there are places like New York that don't share their information, and what does get out seems to be skewed the opposite direction. And it's, you know, it throws the numbers, and until we're all using the same numbers, there's going to be, we're not really going to get to the real answer. And I think that's a part of the critical aspect of what we need from a national perspective.
And some people don't even track their numbers, which is horrible.
Yes. But until we're all tracking the same numbers, we're really not going to be able to draw any conclusions. And that's the frustrating thing with this. I don't disagree with you guys at all. I mean, you know, and a part of this is not to be disagreed with or agreed with. I mean, the simple fact is simple, you know, units are going to run with, you know, one level of two different levels of crews. And they're going to provide good medical care in some areas and lousy medical care in others. And it's going to be because of other extenuating factors other than that the crew is running either men's medic or dual medic or dual EMT. But until we're all using the same frickin' numbers and until we're talking on the same page and on a national basis, we're not going to be able to make those comparisons in a justifiable way. That's all I'm saying.
Bob, you want anything real quick? We got about a minute or so left, bro.
No, this is a great, great conversation. And I echo a lot of things what Tim says. And that's it.
All right. Well, guys, listen.
Good to see you in Baltimore.
Studies even in the same system that look at the number of medics on the call in Milwaukee show that the more medics, the worse the outcome.
Well, you know what, Tim? Tim, if you send me some of those links, I'll be sure to put them on the show notes on some of those studies. And I'll put the Texas articles, as well as some articles on New Jersey's transformation they're trying to do there as well on how they're going to be trying to staff their ambulances also. So, guys, thanks for calling in. Tim, I really appreciate it. Bob, as always, appreciate you calling in. Matt, thanks for calling as well. And I hope maybe we'll see you next time, next week on another topic, I guess.
Thanks for having us.
All right, guys.
Thanks for having us.
You guys, you can find Tim over at roguemedics.com. You can find Bob over at EMSPatientPerspective.com. There will be links to that in the show notes. I encourage you guys to also look at the Texas articles. A lot of comments there by other EMS professionals that kind of bring another view to it as well. So, Josh, thanks, of course, for being with me again. And thanks, everybody, for calling in and for in the chat room also. Until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman from EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.